Hey there, welcome to another episode of the Dead Frog Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Joe Felix. I'm joined by
Allison Kloster.
And we're here to talk about stand-up comedy, yes, ins, the outs, and what makes it funny. Today we'll be covering Chelsea Peretti, a longtime comic. She's been on Just for Laughs. She's in, I think, Last Comic Standing. I know her of Brooklyn Nine-Nine fame, overall funny person. And I'll pass it over to you, Allie. Tell us a little bit more about her.
Absolutely. So, as we know, she is on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Well, she was. She stepped off the show, I think, about a year or so ago. She actually met her co-star Andy Samberg in elementary school when they both grew up in Oakland, California. She ended up moving to Manhattan, where she went to school at Barnard College. She started doing stand-up. She ended up forming a comedy troupe there, and they made short films. She acted in various shorts, and I saw on her one of her earlier credits was in 2007. She had a small role in an indie feature that coincidentally starred Jordan Peele, who became her future husband, and they started dating, like, I think 6 years later. So that's kind of I don't know if that was the beginning of their friendship or what, but that's kind of cool to see. Then she ended up moving to LA. She made appearances on The Kroll Show, Sarah Silverman Program, World's Dumbest Criminal. She was on that for a long time. She ended up becoming a writer for Parks and Rec. She had a huge Twitter presence. She was always very popular on Twitter. I remember discovering her on Twitter, and she had a bunch of, she always typed in all caps, which I thought was really funny. Yeah, because like it was just really unique. And then she became a regular on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. She stepped away from that, and it's interesting timing because we started discussing doing an episode on Chelsea before she ended up releasing just a few days ago her transition into music. It semi-ironically, but also it seems like an actual really good fit for her. She released a concept album about coffee. I have yet to listen to it all, but I started listening to a little bit of it, and it's pretty funny. It just is another example of how she's very whimsical and dark, and it's she's kind of hard to define, but in a really awesome way. So good timing on us. Go Joe and Allie.
Heck yeah, dude. We're so good.
We are so good.
Overall, yeah, she was great. I think she definitely has a very strong personality. She knows how to go in and out of characters real well. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's been cool getting to watch her just do her thing.
Mm-hmm.
And collaborate with a bunch of other real talented people.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get into her stand-up, we should take a break to hear a word from our sponsor and to hear the clip. So stick around.
Very, very, very funny. From New York City, Chelsea Peretti, everyone. Chelsea Peretti.
Thank you. Thanks. Gosh, good to be here. A little bit about me, guys. I'm Jewish and Italian. Thanks. Yeah. Actually lucked out and got the nose of both cultures, so that's been really awesome. It's been a real jackpot. When I was a kid, though, it hadn't fully dropped yet, but people still knew it was coming somehow, like way before I did. I had no idea, you know, like Halloween, I get all dressed up like a little princess, just be excited, you know, and someone would be like, are you Bette Midler? No, I was a pretty little princess. No, you're not. I hate it when people compliment you, but they just kind of reveal how they really see you. They're like, oh, you've got such an exotic look. I'm like, yeah, I know, I have a huge nose. Get the little code that you're using. The worst for me, though, is when someone's like, you know who you look like? I'm like, I don't want to know. An elephant. I'm like, oh. I was kind of hoping it would be an ugly actress again, like usual. This lady just told me that I look like a Pretty Penny Marshall. It's Laverne from fucking Laverne and Shirley. It's really not a nice thing to say. That's like telling someone, you look like a gorgeous Whoopi Goldberg. Whoopi, but gorgeous. That doesn't exist. It's not something found in nature. You look like a suave elephant man. Thank you. I've been torturing myself with those big sunglasses, you know, that all the cool girls are wearing, because I want a pair so bad, but they just don't look right on me at all. But I still have to try them on every time I see them. I'm like, it's going to work. You know, like, I'm going to look like Marilyn Monroe or Lindsay Lohan, you know, someone with class. And, you know, I'll go to put them on all hopeful, and it's just like, Joe. Miami humidity. I carry snacks in my purse. It's very disheartening. My life is just kind of sad. I have to have roommates because I'm not rich. And I actually share a bathroom with a guy, which is very awkward because he shits constantly. It's really endless. Every time I'm trying to get in there, he's like emerging with reading materials and shame, and we avoid eye contact, just like shuffle past. I'm like, you're an animal. Because I'm a lady, you know? We don't shit, we only pee. Right? Sometimes we pee solids out of our ass, But my roommate, his two loves in life are really cooking and shitting. Those are the two things that he's passionate about. And now it's gotten to the point where if I walk into the bathroom and I just see him like sauteing mushrooms, I just get angry. You know, I'm like, you know where this is headed. Now I just resent him for eating. It's like an earthworm. It's just like, just a tube. I had to find my roommates online, and I kept seeing these ads, and it would be a great apartment share, but then at the bottom it would say, must love cats. I'd be like, no, I mustn't. Actually, that's what you love, and I'm looking for shelter. But I did start to build this fantasy of just setting an appointment with one of these people, and then just showing up at their door in a full cat costume. Let's live together. Let's get on their welcome mat. We're compatible. I shouldn't have to live with people because I don't like people. You know, like, I'm not a good friend. Like, if a friend is talking to me, I just find myself like, oh, I hope I look like I'm listening, you know, and I'm just tuning out, thinking about myself. My friend called me up and he wanted to talk to me about his sleep problems, which I knew was going to be riveting. And he's like, man, I couldn't sleep last night. I tried everything. You know, I tried reading for a little while. That didn't do it. I brewed up a big pot of chamomile tea. I'm like, did you try telling yourself this story? Pretty sure that would have knocked you right out. Because it sucks. I blame my family for my awful personality. I don't know if you guys know them, but they're horrible people. When I first started developing breasts, which was obviously a huge project, my grandmother was like, okay, now does your dad rub hot oil on them to help with the soreness? I was like, no. Then I was thinking about it. I'm like, wait a minute, Grandma, did your fucking dad do that? That's not okay. Like, I know times have changed, but I'm pretty sure that was never an all right father-daughter activity. My family's just a mess in general. Like, my parents divorced when I was 1 year old, so I don't really remember any of the details of how it went down or anything like that. But luckily my mom does, so she's been really helpful at filling me in every waking day of my life. That's been awesome. Moms are just weird, unpleasant creatures. I was in this cafe, and this mom was there with her baby, and when I walked past, the baby was watching me, and the mom was like, oh, he likes you. He's such a flirt. I was like, I know. I want to fuck him so bad. Thank you, guys. Good night.
And we're back.
We are back. Woohoo! So hope you guys like that.
Yeah, it was real good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I mean, I can't speak for everybody else.
You all thought it was good.
Yeah, we just heard her 2008 Montreal Just for Laughs set. I really like it. I think it's it's her earliest set that's been documented on a larger stage.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the set is about her appearance and then how other people perceive her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's very important to make that clear, because throughout the set she will give anecdotes or little stories about how other people perceive her, and you're not supposed to be laughing at her. You're supposed to be laughing at how ridiculous it is that how other people feel compelled to talk to her about her appearance.
That's a good point. Yeah.
You know, she starts by saying she's both Jew and Italian, and she's acquired the nose of both of these groups.
Mm-hmm.
And then, even when she was a kid, before she developed her full schnoz, people sort of anticipated it. So, she'd go as a princess to for Halloween, and people would be like, "Oh, who are you, Bette Midler?" Right, which I have to be reminded of Bette Midler's appearance. It's I don't think her nose is that big. Okay.
Yeah, she's a lovely lady. I like Bette Midler.
Yeah, and I think
But it's just the fact that I feel like maybe because I am not in Bette Midler's generation, but I always associate her with being of a certain age, and so it's just really ridiculous the fact that people are telling a child that, because she's so clearly, it's not like Bette Midler was ever, I don't think she was ever a child actor, so it's very clear that they're comparing her to an older woman.
Yeah, as a child, they're comparing her to an older woman. And I like the mention that, she continues on saying about how people perceive her,
mm-hmm.
and they make the comment that she has an exotic look.
Oh my gosh.
And I think it's interesting to point something like that out, and to make that the subject of your set.
Yeah, I feel like it is. She does send, I think it's about half the set is about that, and then when she starts talking about her roommate, she kind of pivots away from that a little bit. But you're definitely right. It's definitely the main subject of her set, and I think it's. It's interesting because I'm at once I'm definitely laughing with her. And I think everything she says is clearly coming from a real place. And to this day, it sucks that this thought has crossed my head in everyone's head, but it doesn't look like she's gotten a nose job and she's been in Hollywood for all these years. And it's let's applaud that. It's yay, you survived all of this ridiculousness. But it also stinks that I even have to be made aware of that fact, which is what she's talking about. But I'm kind of reminded of Fortune Feimster's set that we reviewed not that long ago. And I just noticed a pattern, and I don't know if it's, and yeah, I'm going to say that I think that there's a pattern that I've noticed. And again, it's not every single female comedian, and obviously male comedians talk about their looks too, but it seems like when people start to get on more of a national presence, this is a big, being in Montreal, that's a big deal. So it's a bummer the fact that she has to start her set, and Fortune had to start their set acknowledging to the room about how they look. And even if it's not just about the fact that they feel like that's what they have to say in that moment to that room, the fact that it's been such a fabric of their life where they're constantly aware of people's perceptions of them, that it's so there's nothing wrong with talking about this, but the fact that you have to talk about this and that it's become such a part of your, your DNA as a human, it just, I don't think there's anything wrong with talking about this. It sucks that she has to talk about it. And that's her main, that's the main thing. So yeah, I don't have a judgment or proclamation. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I mean, yeah, under the condition of women being judged as stand-ups on their looks, I think it's maybe one of the strongest moves to do when you might be sort of someone who might be judged on their looks in a negative way. I think it's a strong move to just go for it and, like, lean into it and then address it. This way, you kind of hold the power as to what is said about you, right? Or sure. What the audience is thinking. Like, after this, like, okay, so here's the thing. I can imagine an audience member listening to her set or listening to her tell jokes that aren't about this and then just the whole time thinking,
yes.
Yeah. Boy, does she have, like, a large nose or something.
And sure. And I totally see that as I totally see what you're saying, but it's like, why can't they think that? Like, that's horrible. And the fact that they think that, like, why does she, it's not fair that she has to waste her precious minutes to make that person stop thinking about that thought when maybe they should just fucking listen to her and not have that thought. So it almost feels like time and time again, seeing like a teacher trying to get a hold of her class. Like, I have to come on strong in order for you to listen to me, you know, where they don't, which to me reveals that they don't have the assumption of respect and what other option does she have? Like, the teacher has to do that in order to get the class to listen to them. Of course. But that doesn't mean that it's still not wrong. I'm not saying you're saying this, but it still sucks that, like, that is the one way. Like, the only way to stop a person from thinking about that is to talk about that, which still brings her to a place of having to talk about the thing that she shouldn't have to talk about just to make you not think about it the entire time. Like, there's something still... We're not there yet, is what I'm saying, with comedians. Like, this is in 2008, you know, and we've come a little bit of ways, but... To me, this is a work in progress with female comedians.
Actually, I think that what you said, also in conjunction with the fact that it's very common for early comics to just talk about their appearance to begin with.
Sure.
And since this is one of her early sets.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think that she's about 30 years old in this, and she's an early, you know, comic, or around that age. And... I think you're absolutely right. When you're, she's talking about your appearance is a way, as you said at the beginning, addressing what people perceive of you. And it's like, of course, you're going to be more aware of how people are looking at you earlier in your career. And as you go on and proceed with it, you're not going to care about it as much. You know, you're going to, so that to me, you know, especially knowing Chelsea Peretti and her persona and Brooklyn Nine-Nine is Gina, you know, Linetti, like, and even with the Coffee album she just released, like, she would not waste any time now talking about this stuff, but it makes sense that she would talk about that at the beginning of her career, because so that I can see as being, you know, like, it's funny and she makes it work, but to me, there's like, it's still a little bit sad. I can't help but, you know, be a little bit sad when I hear that part. I was almost relieved when she started talking about her roommate.
Oh yeah. Damn. Okay. Well,
yeah. It's funny shit. I'm not saying she's not funny, but and maybe it's the nature of just doing this podcast with you and hearing all these different types of people in their earlier sets. But yeah, that's just.
Gotcha. Well, if we could then let's go over the technical aspects of this, of the first couple sets relating to, I mean, first couple of jokes relating to her parents.
Mm-hmm.
Introduces herself that she's Jewish and Italian. Right. She brings up the stereotype of the nose. Right. Then this is like a shared reference by everyone. Then she makes an example. She gives like a little personal anecdote. I mean, I don't know if it's true that she was called Bette Midler, right?
Sure.
It's almost like she's positing this person that's like her exact replica, but not herself. Like, she's talking about herself, but she's, instead of like calling it lying, she's more like, this is like my little doppelganger. Like, here's the person that I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
In this way, it's not really a lie. It's more like a... What would you call, like a dummy?
In the sure.
Way, so that, you know, you can... She can, like, jar at that. She can, like, say anything about that thing that reflects her. A lot, like, actually lying, right? Because I don't know if you ever have seen this. There are some comics who go up there, right? And, like, it's hard for them to appear sincere with their jokes and anecdotes, because it's just like, oh, you're clearly lying, right? There's something in your attitude about addressing what you're saying that makes it clear that you're lying. But with Chelsea, you're like, oh no, no, I'm in the world that you're fabricating about this little girl who's supposed to resemble you, right?
Yeah.
Then I like the euphemism, the exotic look thing.
I love that.
Yeah. I also like, this is where I think it's very like, this is where she really shatters the fourth wall and like social norms. When she talks about how someone will come up to her and ask like, you know who you look like? And she's like, I don't want to know. Right? Which is like,
yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, that's so good. Like, she's, I think that she's already, like, even with the nose dropping part, and like, there's a few different times where she's used, I don't want to say idioms or, but common tropes, and she subverts them. Like, it's just a very, clever, seamless, like, you think I'm gonna, she takes a thing that we all should want and know, like a very normal, like, what is the word I'm trying to think of? Yeah, you think she's going to be filling out the rest of the sentence like this, but then she twists it and she's like, no, actually, I don't want to know what I look like, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really clever and seamless.
Well, yeah, in the same way, like, you know, stand-ups will talk about social norms, right? In one sense, part of the crowd agrees and thinks it's funny and they already don't do what you're not supposed to be doing, right?
Right.
But then there's a part of the audience who does that, and now they're coming to realize maybe they shouldn't do that, and like in a way of showcasing that you know something, you know how you laugh to show that you understand what the message is of the joke. Yeah, so Chelsea's being sort of pedagogical in this sense, right? She's like, this is a story where the thing that some of you do you shouldn't be doing, because this is how people really feel about it.
That's a really good point. That's a very good way to put a lot of the content and the tone. It's almost like she's, and you know, it's very powerful, because I don't want to say she's like moral policing. That's not it, but like it's like a checks and a balance. It's she's seen and treated by the world in a certain way, and she's basically throughout her set kind of showing her distance and how it's and her observational tendencies, and how she kind of looks at things from afar, but I almost like she's like, that's bullshit. I can see her with like a clipboard, like calling out everything, and I think that's a shtick that she's kind of had with her career.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, not in terms of like, she has this confidence that you just like what she observes, she delivers it, and it's like, I'm like, yeah, she's right. Like, it's just like, she just has such a quick and efficient way of making you pay attention to the stuff that you don't even realize, you know, is bullshit. So,
that's one way. Like, if someone's like thinking about changing up their style of comedy or adapting to one, like finding your voice in comedy. Going observational in this way and giving like a first-hand account of the observation is a good way to be personal without being too, what's the word?
Preachy, I guess?
Yeah, preachy. Or... You're right. Yep.
Yeah, I think that's exactly... She has a nice fusion of observational with storytelling.
Yeah, definitely. And then the other one where it's like people will be like, well, you look like a pretty Penny Marshall.
Right? I love that one.
Yeah, she goes on into like how constantly she's being harassed, right? In a way where people just seem oblivious to the fact that they are harassing her. Yeah, she really keeps hitting this point with examples, which is like, it's fine to do, because like she makes kind of a similar joke maybe five times in the first 3 minutes, and it's like, yeah, I don't mind, because she keeps switching it up, and she keeps switching up how the people did it.
Right. Yes. She departs. She goes from Bette Midler to Penny Marshall, which is kind of a similar lateral move in terms of people, but the way she's but the actual Joe convention is different. And then from Penny Marshall to the Elephant Man, I think, and then from the Elephant Man.
Well, she says like, or, it's like if you were to call me like the handsome Elephant Man.
Oh right. Yes. And then, go on.
There was one weird thing where she was like, you know, you're kind of like the good-looking Whoopi Goldberg, which I felt unfair. I thought it was unfair for her to, like, use her as an example.
I know. That one was a little bit, I was like, okay, maybe it's 2008. I don't know. Like, but also, maybe I'm the one who's wrong here. Maybe, you know, it's like post-racial in a sense where it's like she's just, because Whoopi does have a very unique look, you know? Like, so I don't know. It made me kind of like, okay.
A unique look? Would you say she's exotic looking?
Oh my gosh. No, she's got those. Glasses. Like, Whoopi. Like, just Whoopi is a unique woman. She's always been. She's always been a little bit more androgynous and had just a different vibe a lot more before a lot of people. And yes, she's Black, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not really the person to speak to this. It was a little bit of a, oh, that's not fair, but I guess I can kind of see where she's coming from.
It's interesting that you saw it as a race thing, because I didn't at all.
Well, I didn't see the joke. My point is that I understood where she was coming from, that she wasn't coming at it from a race thing, because Whoopi, but you saying that it was unfair, I assumed you were saying was because of the race thing.
No, I just mean because she's just like a person who never, she's not someone who like showcases her look. It's like it was unfair in the way that if she had pulled anybody out, like she didn't have to pull out just like I think Whoopi's just like a normal looking person. It's like if she had said I don't know, John, what's it, Jason Statham, or if she had said Jeff Goldberg or Goldblum. And it's like, why would you bring them into this? They're just having, here's what I imagine. They're just having a good day, right? And they're like, oh, who's this Chelsea Peretti gal? And they listen and they're like, oh, I didn't know I was related to this. I didn't know I was part of this shtick, right?
Okay.
But the Elephant Man, like, you know, that's like a notoriously, you know, disfigured man, right?
Yes. Wait, I'm trying to go back to the Whoopi thing. I just don't. Was she saying that people said that she looked like Whoopi, or that she thinks that people would? Did she actually say that someone did in her fake example?
No, she's saying that calling her like a pretty Penny Marshall is like calling her a pretty Whoopi Goldberg, or a good looking Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh my gosh, I didn't get the joke until this exact second. It's because they look the exact same. Penny Marshall and Whoopi are the exact same. Okay.
Yeah.
They both have the same exact body language, grin, style.
There we go.
Okay. I mean, maybe because I'm constantly bracing whenever, that's probably my white awareness. But yeah, I mean, I get it. Yeah, they do have the exact, I never made that connection before until this exact second. They're like the same person.
Yeah, then she moves on to a very like, at the time sort of reference. Yeah, she wants to wear these cool sunglasses that like gals that are popular in 2008, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she talks about how she wants to look dignified, sort of like Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, that was good. That got the biggest laugh up until that point in her set.
Yeah, because it was like at the time, Lindsay Lohan was kind of, she had that party girl persona like in 2007. She had received that, she was arrested, right?
And there's
a big mugshot.
This was peak let's all shit on Lindsay.
Yeah, which, dang, dude, why?
I know, she's a, yeah, well, I partook in it as well, I'm sure. Very sad.
I would have liked
so
to
much
see
promise.
She had a, it sucks that she got, what's the word?
Promise?
Like a soft blacklist.
Lindsay?
Yeah, like she's not in good movies anymore.
It's because she can't. She's been given chances, and even in the shitty movies she's in, she just does not, it's like she forgot to how to act. She literally forgot how to act. And it's because she's stuck in this paralysis of trauma from all those years of child stardom messing around with her head with her crazy ass parents.
Yeah, I like that. I like the idea of a band called Paralysis of Trauma.
Paralysis. I mean, there's no other explanation for a person to be able to go from being a good actor to a crappy actor in a few years. You don't just become a bad actor unless something happened to you. All right. Like, she has the talent. You don't just lose talent.
Then she goes on to say that there's like, but with her, when she puts on the glasses, she looks like an old Floridian sort of person.
Oh, yes.
And then she, when she does that little the act out, you know, she gives these details that are related to Florida. And, you know, since you understand the reference, you laugh because you're like, oh, I know what you're saying. Right.
Because she's not. Yeah, exactly. That's a good example of a joke where she doesn't explicitly deliver the punchline. She does a little physicality and that invites the audience to feel smart and like they know the reference. Exactly.
Well, then she talks about her roommate.
Mm-hmm.
Who seems to only be interested in two things, cooking and using the restroom.
So good. And then how he avoids eye contact as he leaves with a stack of like reading material. It's very relatable because without saying much, well, first of all, without saying much, you know what kind of roommate, that it's they're not friends. Not that they have she doesn't have to explicitly say, you just know based on the fact that they avert eye contact. Not that you would make dead eye contact with a friend as you're leaving the bathroom, but I don't know.
Then, you know, she talks about like the whole processes of finding a roommate and like looking at the ads and coming across an ad that said, must love cats.
Oh my gosh, yes.
So she claims that she goes and to these, she meets up with these people who put up the ads dressed as a cat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Just to sort of, what's the word? Jab at them with their own sort of, like she one-ups them in a like an insulting manner.
Yes. I love the visual there. I think that is just, I mean, that was one of my, this is when the set really started kicking in for me. It was it's one of the more surrealist bends in her, I guess, departures in it, and especially with Now and how she's doing this very surrealist concept album and all of her, like, this to me is showing she's now infusing her set not just with observational stuff and a story. I like the departure into kind of like a weird, you know, fake scenario. I really like that a lot.
Yeah. It's always you see this in stand-up sometimes where comics will be like, this is the thing. Let me see how I can kind of ridicule someone for saying this thing by creating like a false binary.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, it's either you don't like cats or you like cats so much.
Yes. And I can, this exact observation, like, this is what fuels comedians and comics. Like, I've written, this is the, or I can see myself writing a sketch on this, you know, like so many things coming in, so many sketches and you know, come from just being like, really, you said that? Okay, well, what if we actually did what you said? What if we actually took this literally? And it's so satisfying, just the visual of her in the cat suit. And
yeah, upon meeting someone being in a cat suit, yeah, and just acting like one. Also, like, she said, like, you know, it's always, so I like that she keeps it within her realm, like her immediate sort of circle of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just like we saw in the Fortune Themester stuff, like, you kind of want to be relatable, right? One, you want to show that you have these same relationships with people that other people do have, right? That you also have friends and families.
Sure.
And you also want to show that sometimes you can be a bad friend. Right, so people are already on board with the premise of this. She's not a good friend, and when she talks to her friend about his sleeping problems, she's just she's in her mind, she's just thinking about how like boring that is, like, or she's thinking about herself. And then she suggests that he kind of tell the story to himself.
To put himself asleep? Yeah, that is. Do you watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the most. I could see that literal sentence lifted and copy and pasted into an episode of her character. I can see her saying that to Charles. Like, Charles can't fall asleep. Why don't you take some chamomile tea and you'll fall asleep? Yeah. And which just goes to show this is another part of her persona with the whole I hate people type persona.
Oh, you know, I didn't see it that way, but I think do you keep referring to the Brooklyn Nine-Nine character that she plays?
Yes, that's why I keep saying the Brooklyn Nine-Nine character. No. Well,
you make it seem like she is she hates people.
When did I say that she hates people?
Sorry, she dislikes people just like in her everyday.
No, she says literally in her set that she hates people, and I'm saying that's a character, like her most famous role to date is Gina Linetti, and I'm saying that there's that character is so specific, and she clearly pulled that, just like how Aubrey Plaza literally had a character written for her persona in real life. Not to say that's who Aubrey Plaza is, but her persona, they wrote it into a character in a show. And I bet you there are some things that were written, especially since she was already in like the whole Mike Schur universe, which, you know, obviously was Brooklyn Nine-Nine. They probably wrote the character of Gina with this persona already in mind. The persona, and you can kind of see the origins of that in the set, which are interesting, which is how, you know, she's kind of having this I'm kind of an asshole to people. Like, do I think that she's actually an asshole to people in real life? No, but that this is the persona that she's cultivating in this setup.
Gotcha. Thank you. You know, my brain's not working today. I only slept like 6 hours as opposed to my usual 10 to 12.
Well, you should have drank some chamomile tea.
Yep, that's the thing people should drink.
Actually, I'm drinking some right now. Nope, this is not chamomile. This is matcha. Slight difference. Slight difference. One has caffeine, one don't. But yeah, so we were talking about
the next thing, which is her horrible family.
Yes, the mom joke. Yeah, I know, that was really good.
Set it up for us.
The mom one? Okay, what? Hold on.
Wait, you're missing one. Which one? How, you know, she has a horrible family, and like, during puberty, while she was growing her breasts,
oh my God.
Like, her grandmother asked if, like, or something, her aunt asked if, like, her dad was, or if
it was her grandma. Grandma asked if her dad
was rubbing oil or something?
Yes.
On her boobs to help with the soreness? Oh, and she points out how like incestual that is.
It's so creepy. Like, it's like a double whammy of like, no, what does that do? And then like, why would my dad? And then wait, you did that happen to you? Like, it's like a triple whammy of like awkward in 1 second.
Yeah, I think it's super funny.
Oh my gosh! Like, that is such a that story is too specific to not be true. Like, not that I wouldn't believe her, but like, she doesn't need to add any sort of like, she just says it straight. Like, it's just so funny. It's so good.
Yeah, I like this, like, as an opportunity. This is where, like, maybe a bunch of like victims suddenly realize that they were victimized, right? And they're like, oh wait, that was a weird thing, right?
Like, this is the moment.
Yeah.
Oh, which is sad. And once again, comedy is a nice vehicle for pointing out deeply sad things.
Hell yeah, dude.
Man. then after that, it was the mom joke. And how did she set that one up?
Yeah, that her parents got divorced at one. Or right. When she was one.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, tell the joke.
Oh yeah, and she's talking about how it's not even let's see. Oh. Hold on. So, you know what? You tell the joke. Because I'm forgetting the convention of it. I need to go back and listen to it. I'm forgetting it. So basically, she's talking about how her mom was an unpleasant creature or something.
That Chelsea wasn't old enough to remember the divorce. But her mom does. And so she, you know, reminds her of all the, or gives her all the details. Right? But you're laughing because it's an unpleasant thing to hear about. But you're for, and like you had the opportunity to not hear like the dirty details, but your mom makes you listen to them.
Yep. And I don't even think she ends up saying, I think she just leaves it as like the implication of everyone knows, everyone has this collective awareness of how moms are. Yeah. So she doesn't even need to explicitly say the, like the dot, dot, dot. It's like the end of the punchline is simply the implication of what her mom said.
Yeah. And then she moves on to going to a cafe or something and spotting a baby. This is her closing joke, which I'm oh, you enjoyed it, huh?
I like, you didn't like this one.
No.
I love this one because my let's say it first and then I'll give my thoughts.
Say it.
Okay, so basically she's at a cafe and there's a baby who was looking at Chelsea, and then the baby's mom was like, "Oh, look, he likes you. He's such a flirt." And then Chelsea says to the mom, she goes, "I know, I want to fuck him." And then she walks away. And I just, obviously that didn't happen. I sure as hell hope she didn't actually say that. But maybe actually she could have, because just like how Chelsea didn't remember anything about her parents' divorce at one, that baby will not remember that encounter. But I personally loved it because just the sexualization of babies all the time. Like, you know, I think I'm very aware of it because I am gay and I am from a family that, you know, it's still a work in progress, just trying to understand that. And I'm very hyper aware of when, and I have three nephews, and when people say things like, oh, like when I hear people saying, oh, look at, he's playing with that little girl, oh, they're like boyfriend and girlfriend, it's like, you, that shit's so annoying to me. And it's just like, don't put that on a kid who's just playing with each other. Like, they're so young, you don't know what they're gonna be like, you don't know how that affects a kid who already, like, even though you're like a little gay kid doesn't know they're gay until years later. Like, that stuff matters. And the fact that people act like it doesn't matter and treat babies like adults, it's just annoying. It's just really a part of this whole heteronormative, like, indoctrination that begins, and this elimination of babies. Like, we're not allowed to treat babies like babies. We have to apply. I could rant about this for a long time, Joe. So I'm glad that she called it out, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Little gay kids.
Yep. That's the moral of the story.
I mean, she's making sort of a very similar move to the move she did earlier, where she's like, oh, must like cats, and then she goes on to be a cat, right? She's like, okay, well, you're opening the door for like a romantic, fucking, a positing a romantic interaction between the baby and her, right? That's what the mom's doing,
right?
So she's like, okay, you're opening that door. Let me go further, right? Let me reach the conclusion.
Yeah, I think that's a really good observation. The must love cats in this, they both seem to be examples of how she wants us to be more mindful of the things that we say that make ourselves feel better, and be aware of the fact that when we say these things, even though it's fun for us to say must love cats, it's fun for us to say, oh, our baby's flirting, it's fun for us to say, oh, do you know who you look like, little girl? Even those things might cross our mind, you don't have to say everything that crosses your mind, because these things have consequences. And I think that her whole set has been shaped around addressing the fact that these things that you say have consequences.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, ultimately, you know, Chelsea is giving a first-hand account of all these bizarre things that happened to her. One, because she's a woman, but also a woman who might not live up to standards that people want. And I think she makes a lot of good points. And
yeah,
that's what comedy is about, dude. Once you're a marginalized person or a minority in any sense, then, you know, you come in with good takes, most of, or new takes. It's not always good takes. These are good takes.
Yes. Yeah. I completely agree. Yeah.
But yeah, overall, good set. Any final thoughts on this?
No, I mean, this is making me want to go right now and listen to her coffee album.
Which everyone should do.
Yes.
Regardless of whether you like her or not, whether you have bandwidth or you're paying for data or your life depends on it, you should be doing something else and that'll keep you alive. Go listen to this.
Yes.
Album.
Immediately.
All right. I think we killed that frog.
We killed that frog. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.